大家好，欢迎收看《美国之音》的时事大家谈，我是叶凡。将近1年半过去了，新冠疫情起源仍然是一个谜。不过，一度被称为阴谋论的实验室泄露假设，正在得到越来越多的关注。历史上，世界各国不乏实验室泄露，甚至导致严重后果的例子，其中一些事故的根源至今没有明确的答案。那要证明实验室泄露为什么如此的困难？要如何堵住生物安全方面的漏洞？历史事件对新冠调查有什么启示？今天我们邀请乔治亚大学历史学家史蒂文·米姆博士来分析和讨论。米姆博士是2010年《纽约时报》10大畅销书的作家之一，也是美国史密森学会莱梅尔森发明与创新研究中心的杰出研究员。Professor Mim, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
In your article entitled The History of Lab Leaks Has Lots of Entries, recently published on Bloomberg, you said the history of lab safety shows that leaks of pathogens have happened in the past, sometimes with deadly consequences. It also shows that even transparent, thorough investigations into the origins of an outbreak can end in uncertainty. Why is it so difficult to prove lab leaks? Could you give us such an example?
Absolutely. So the primary reason lab leaks are so difficult to understand and get to the bottom of has a lot to do with the fact that oftentimes the labs themselves don't know what happened. So a good case in point is the famous last known death of smallpox, which is one of the worst virulent, most virulent pathogens in human history. In 1979, there was a lab leak in a British lab of people studying smallpox. At this point, smallpox was no longer in the wild, and a medical photographer in the lab died after being exposed to the pathogen. She herself did not have access to the area where they were studying the pathogens, and in an initial inquiry in Great Britain, which was open and transparent, concluded that it was the ventilation system. But a subsequent report correctly concluded that there was no way she could have gotten it through the ventilation system. And so they ultimately had to conclude that somehow she had breached protocol and entered into the space that the smallpox was being studied. That's in a society, Great Britain, where they did a very open, transparent inquiry, and that took several years. And we still don't know what happened in 1979 at that facility. And that gives you some sense of just how easy it is for a pathogen to escape through human error, through mistakes, through a failure to follow protocol, and how then that, as a consequence, makes it almost impossible sometimes to reconstruct precisely what happened.
Yeah, in the same article you wrote, when lab leaks take place in a secretive society, the difficult job of confirming the source of an outbreak gets much harder. Can you please explain why and give us some typical examples of that event in history?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, in any case where there's a lab leak of a deadly pathogen, it's somewhat human. It's a very human tendency to want to either cover it up or minimize it. And in a secretive society, say the Soviet Union during the height of the Cold War, which is a good example, you had a system where there wasn't really any interest whatsoever in divulging truth to either the Soviet people, much less admitting that to your adversary. In this case, it was the United States. So in the Soviet Union, there was a very famous incident, again, in the 1970s, where there were rumors of an outbreak of anthrax at a city called Sverdlovsk, which is a secretive city, fairly remote. And we couldn't in the United States figure out what had happened. And eventually, the Soviets admitted there had been an anthrax outbreak, and they blamed it on frozen meat, that frozen meat, contaminated meat, had killed off a bunch of people. And American scientists actually collaborated with the Soviets in showing that this had happened, supposedly. Unfortunately, that was actually not what happened. In fact, the Soviets had covered up what had happened, which was that they were operating a bioweapons facility at a place called Compound 19, which was manufacturing aerosolized, weaponized anthrax. And in that case, someone had forgotten to change a filter in the anthrax facility. It was an error, again, not purposeful at all. It was an error. And it had killed off approximately 70 people. We don't even know for sure how many died of anthrax. This only came to light after the end of the Soviet Union. It only really came to light in the late 1980s and beginning in the early 1990s, when the American scientist who had initially endorsed the so-called frozen meat theory turned out and realized when Soviet pathologists who had secretly kept specimens from the lungs of victims divulged the truth, and the truth finally came out. But that's a great example here. You have, 20 years of obfuscation and cover-up. That's how long it took. And right now, obviously, in the case of COVID-19, we don't know what happened. I think that's a point worth making. And it may well be that the Chinese government may not fully know what happened either, which is also a point worth making.
But in the former Soviet Union case, you pointed out it was the intelligence, not the scientists, who finally solved the puzzles. So,
Absolutely. No,
yeah.
it's fascinating actually, because we like to, we like to believe that scientists are infallible, but when they're working with incomplete evidence, and especially, God help us, if they're working with falsified evidence, as they were with the anthrax outbreak, it's oftentimes the intelligence services that can provide a more clearer look, because they're used to weighing the kind of ambiguity that comes with these sorts of incidents.
So the U.S. intelligence state investigates through the satellite pictures and talk
Right.
to the survivors. Yeah. So,
Yeah, absolutely.
yes.
Well, in the case of the anthrax episode, the satellite photos actually showed at the time that there were decontamination trucks headed to the city, which is not incompatible with the frozen meat explanation, but suggested that something truly catastrophic had happened. The entire city was shut down. So that was an indication that there was a problem that went beyond a simple ingestion of ordinary anthrax.
So now President Biden ordered the U.S. intelligence to investigate the origin of COVID-19. How hopeful are you that without China's cooperation, the U.S. intelligence could find the answers to the COVID origin? Are 90 days enough?
No, I think if history tells us anything, we're going to need a lot more than 90 days, I'm afraid. The only thing that could happen, I suppose, is that we, there could be other forms of evidence that start to materialize that are more conclusive, either through defectors or people who can perhaps reconstruct some of what's happened on both in the lab and also potentially, and we don't know this, if there was any manipulation of the virus itself, which is a separate issue from whether it leaked from the lab. These are all in the popular imagination. Unfortunately, all of this is getting mixed together, but it's quite possible to have a natural origin for the virus, meaning it's an existing virus that leaked from a lab. It's also possible to have an enhanced version of a natural virus that leaked from a lab. And it's also, of course, popular to have a natural origin, period. So these things are all very complicated and complex. But the good news is that I suspect the truth will ultimately come out as it usually does in these matters.
Some newly uncovered video of the Wuhan Institute of Virology claims that bats were kept in the lab. More concerns have been raised that Peter Daszak, a member of WHO investigation team of the COVID origin, has conflict of interest. Well, Peter Daszak denies there were bats kept in the lab and there was no study of gain of function in the Wuhan lab. Peter Daszak is the president of EcoHealth Alliance, who founded the Wuhan Institute of Virology's research on bat SARS-related coronaviruses. Do you have any confidence for the future investigation again by WHO team?
I think the WHO has no credibility whatsoever in this, to put it bluntly. They produced a report that was generated by a team that was handpicked by the Chinese government and was prominently led by a man with the most and biggest conflicts of interest of all, arguably, in all of this, the professor J or Dr. Jashik. So the idea that the WHO will get to the bottom of this, I think, is laughable. We'll see. What you raise, though, is an immensely important point as well, in that there have been repeated conflicts of interest that have surfaced, most famously in the original Lancet letter, the letter in the British Scientific Journal that Dashik had put together, had brokered, dismissing the lab leak hypothesis. And it is a hypothesis, it's not a proven fact, but he dismissed it as a quote unquote conspiracy theory. And now we know a lot more, and what we know suggests that he, and by extension, to some extent, the WHO, are not credible on this issue at all.
Former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb said these kinds of lab leaks happen all the time, even in here in the United States. We had mishaps. And in China, the last known outbreaks of SARS-1 have been out of labs. So one
Yes.
well-known example in the U.S. is that in the 2001 anthrax stolen from a federal bioweapons lab killed 5 people and sickened 17 more. So, what
Correct.
measures has the US taken or should take to prevent biosafety leaks?
At this point, biosafety is, in my own mind, as a historian, a rather terrifying question that demands further oversight and regulation. Because, as you point out, there have been leaks in the United States, which has done an otherwise commendable job of trying to enforce lab safety. But working with high-level pathogens, virulent pathogens, even at a biosafety level 4 facility, is no guarantee, as we know, that there will not be leaks. What's particularly worrisome, in my own mind, is that the number of BSL biosafety level 4 facilities is growing around the world and operating in countries that historically have had a mixed record of compliance with international protocols. Given that, if it can happen here in the United States, it could certainly happen in other countries. And that should give us all considerable unease, not even about COVID, but simply about going forward in the future, that this is an area that demands much more oversight and regulation than it's currently getting.
So, what lessons can we learn from these events in the history?
Well, the first is that we need to be patient, and let the intelligence services and the scientists do their work without the kind of second guessing that I'm afraid we're seeing a lot of lately. The second is that we're going to need to give them time, that we need to be patient, and I'm afraid 90 days is probably insufficient. The third is that there needs to be probably much more international coordination and oversight of safety in labs. And then the fourth, which is a hypothetical, but I think is a question that needs to be addressed, is that some of the debate over the lab leak, quote unquote, in Wuhan concerns the possibility that the WIV was doing so-called gain of function research. This is a very controversial line of scientific research. There was a moratorium on it in the United States. It should also, in all likelihood, be the subject of some international discussion about what sort of research should be conducted and under what kind of guidelines and safety.
Thank you so much, Professor Min. Pleasure to have
Thanks.
you on the show.
Thanks.
好，非常感谢乔治亚大学历史学家史蒂文·米姆博士的分析和讨论。来宾发表的都是个人意见，并不一定代表美国之音。